And brothers and sisters, I wish to thank you for attending. I ask you to let this hour that we're together be as though we were sitting in my living room having a confidential talk about a serious concern. You are a mighty army. Let us be strong in defending our position, and we do so in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ. Amen.
Isn't this a glorious California morning? Last month, the California Supreme Court made history by ruling for equality in marriage. And this morning, we're all here to give flesh and blood reality to that ruling. We're going to make history.
He was 20, I was 23. We were pretty young, and I'd actually never been on a date with a guy before. So yeah, how did I know? He's the first guy that I actually seriously considered.
After our first date, he called at 10 a.m. the next morning. And I had my sisters listen to the message because I wanted to see what they thought. They're like, oh, he sounds cute.
And it was tough because, you know, I was still very much struggling with being Mormon and reconciling that with being gay. And that became tougher as it became not a physical thing. It became such an emotional, psychological thing. The connection I felt with Tyler was something I had never felt before. And it took me, you know, 2 weeks to be like, you know, this is love. I've never felt this before. The Supreme Court decision had come down, and suddenly marriage was a possibility. And so we went down to Big Sur on the Central California coast, and I got him a ring, and I proposed, and he said, yes.
I do. On the first day gay couples could get married in California, hundreds made their way to city halls to make their dream of marriage a reality.
What better day to get married than this first historic day? But we did not know what we were in for. Immediately, we saw all these news trucks and the helicopters and people outside.
My son Tyler called me 7 o'clock in the morning. Said, Mom, we have our suits on. We're going down to City Hall to see if we can get a license. He said, we couldn't get an appointment. They were all taken up, but we're just going to stand in line and see if we can get in.
One guy at the door, he was like, okay, you don't have an appointment, but just I'm going to let you in.
He said, I'm going to look down at this clipboard, and as I'm writing, walk behind my back.
So we snuck into the courthouse, to the city hall.
And he called me every 20 minutes. Just, oh my God, Mom, we got in the door. And then he calls me and says, we're getting married, we're getting married. And I'm freaking out because I'm not there. And it's like, wait, I'm not there. No, don't wait to do it.
We went up to the Central Rotunda in beautiful San Francisco City Hall.
With Harvey Milk's bust looking over our shoulder.
And it was so perfect and magical.
You, Spencer, and Tyler have given and pledged your love and faithfulness to the other and have declared the same by joining hands by virtue of the authority vested in me as Deputy Marriage Commissioner by the State of California. I now pronounce you partners in life. You may take it.
In the moment, as we felt the enormity of what we were doing, making that real, solid, and recognized commitment to each other that is like no other commitment two people can make, and getting a license that says marriage certificate, you know, the stamp of the state of California on that, we could have made it on our own, and plenty of gay couples do make it on their own, but it's such a struggle, and it's hard, and, you know, it's hard for straight couples, right? So having that certificate suddenly makes it a little bit easier.
This was a good day for thousands of people in love. Marriage for all, and equal rights for all.
It feels so great to live in this city and this state on this day when history is being made, and I can't believe that I get to be a part of it, and I get to marry my partner of 6 years, and just feel all of this emotion. It's huge.
Everything changed when they got married, and I don't think people understand that. You know, why can't they just have a civil union or have this? It's different when you get married. That commitment level changes. Their relationship went to a totally new level. I can't even describe it.
But their happiness would not last long. forces were already conspiring to take it all away.
And before the champagne was even warm from those celebrations, we were defending that victory and those marriages at the ballot box.
This is the eighth of 12 propositions on California's 2008 ballot. One sentence, 14 words. Only marriage between a man and a woman is valid or recognized in California.
Proposition 8 had actually been on the ballot before marriage was legalized, almost a year ahead of time. So people knew this proposition was coming.
I think that the groundwork was being laid. The infrastructure was being put in place. The alliances, the negotiations amongst different interest groups were being put together.
They had a very coordinated strategy. They were already gathering signatures.
And you had to do this really in a compressed time frame. We had a decision come down in the springtime. People are starting to get married. Proposition 8 qualifies for the ballot in the beginning of the summer. You have an election that's in November.
The only way you can win any ballot measure in California is money. That is the number one thing that you need. The second thing you need is volunteers. And then the final thing, you need a message that resonates.
Money, volunteers, and a message. One organization with all three of these rose above the rest that summer, saying to the others, "Come follow me."
The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints is organizing some of its members to call in support of a California proposition that defines marriage between a man and a woman.
Some ask, what is wrong when marriage is granted to those of the same gender, as was done by the California Supreme Court? I've already stated one reason. It is contrary to God's plan.
Elder Quentin Cook is one of the 12 apostles of the Mormon Church. He and other Mormon leaders commanded the church's worldwide membership to unite in striking down gay marriage, something that for Mormons has been a decades-long holy war. Fred Karger has investigated this war by following the money and the memos. He's a heavyweight in the world of political campaigns and a specialist in investigating dirty politics. During his investigation into Prop 8, he was given classified documents passed between top Mormon leaders.
This guy called me on the phone and said he had some documents to give to me. And I follow up on every lead, and so I met him in the Hotel Monaco bar. I mean, it was really like a movie. I was given this box of hundreds and hundreds of documents, which were official Mormon documents, which just completely shed light on this entire operation of theirs. I was amazed. I'd never seen anything like this in 30 years of politics. This was exactly their campaign plan. These were the most revealing memos and emails that I'd ever seen. It showed exactly how they operate. This whole battle for same-sex marriage began in Hawaii when the Supreme Court ordered that this issue be addressed, and it was done through the legislature and then eventually to a vote of the people in 1998, and the church was very involved in that from day one. The Mormon documents go very much into detail, talking about the polling they've done.
The church needs to conduct a public opinion survey. $100,000 is needed immediately so we can get the survey work started.
Talking about how they should not be the leaders of this because they'll actually hurt the issue.
The LDS Church receives a lukewarm favorability rating in Hawaii. This information suggests that the church should maintain a very low visibility in this campaign. We do not want to risk negative association.
They've got polygamy issue. They didn't allow blacks in the church till 1978. They were just always kind of an outcast.
5 April, 1996. Our survey tells us we can get greater public support by working with a coalition than if we tried to do this as a church. initial work will be done as quietly as possible.
So the Mormon Church decided to go out and find others to front for them.
We may have to initiate the creation of a coalition.
So they decided to go out and get the Catholics.
The first overtures to the Catholic Church have been made.
They saw the Catholics surveyed much better, that they were much more acceptable by the general public. So they went and approached the Catholic Church and asked them to come into this coalition and really front it for them.
President Hinckley told us to go to Hawaii and get the coalition organized.
There is a meeting held by Church President Gordon Hinckley at his estate in Hawaii, where one of the Catholic cardinals came out. And this was when the deal was cemented. This is when they made that alliance that has lasted to this day.
The Lord has blessed the coalition. The battle has begun.
Behind every successful coalition is someone who's paying for it.
21 March 1996. The coalition continues to raise money, but the majority needs to come from us.
The Hawaii Christian Coalition announced today it hopes to spend $1.25 million to back the constitutional amendment allowing the legislature to define marriage.
Checks should be from individuals and can go to Hawaii's future today. We have distanced the church from the coalition itself.
In Hawaii, the group is called Hawaii's Future Today, and the documents we have show exactly the type of people they wanted to chair it. In these documents, they describe they want a young mother who's not affiliated with the church, and bam, a month later, they give us Debbie Hartman.
I'm Debbie Hartman. I'm a wife and mother, and I am representing being a wife and mother.
Who is a young mother, president of the Board of Education, well-known. She's a Mormon, but she's not really known as such.
6 March, 1996. The coalition carries the cause. A coalition is hard to attack, and particularly a young mother who was the chair of the State Board of Education. The church is not visible. 11 February, 1997. The coalition has been able to exert great influence without the church being singled out. Monies previously budgeted may be released for purposes of media and lobbying. We have organized things so the church contribution was used in an area of coalition activity that does not have to be reported. As we get down to crunch time, our demonstrators will be out literally 24 hours a day. 5 June 1996. Our people know who to vote for. The Mormon Church's plot against marriage equality in Hawaii worked. The miracle of this whole issue is that the focus has been on the coalition. And not at any time has either our church or the Catholics been singled out. This required some careful orchestration. We believe California is very ripe for a successful ballot initiative.
The script that they used in Hawaii, the battle plan they had, was almost exactly what they ended up doing in California during the Proposition 8 campaign.
Just as they did in Hawaii, they brought in a high-ranking Mormon, Matthew Holland in this case, to be on the board to share the church's message, to make sure that they were well represented since they were paying the bills on this.
And Carger says the front group Mormon set up was the National Organization for Marriage.
Matthew Holland, who's very high up in the Mormon Church, his father, Jeffrey Holland, is one of the 12 Mormon apostles. He went to Robert P. George, who's this jurisprudence professor at Princeton, and actually asked him to set up this new front group, the National Organization for Marriage. Robert P. George brought in Maggie Gallagher, who's this columnist and kind of the darling of the right, and she became the president of the National Organization for Marriage. She, in turn, then brought in Brian Brown, who was the head of the Family Institute of Connecticut, which was kind of a anti-gay, anti-birth control type organization that was part of Focus on the Family and the Catholic Church. They then brought in a full board of directors to surround them, and then that became this elaborate front group to shield the Mormon Church. Now, the National Organization for Marriage was only founded in late 2007, and so they really had to hit the ground running. They had a deadline to get the signatures, to get 1.1 million signatures in order to qualify Prop 8 for the November ballot. So they had a hustle. They had to raise $2 million. They had to hire a professional signature gathering firm to collect all these signatures and to try and put this coalition together.
Carger says by early 2008, the Mormon Front Group, with the help of professional signature gatherers, presented a stack of petitions to get Prop 8 on the ballot.
Church members who are California citizens but live out of state could start to call their family and friends in California to promote Proposition 8.
Welcome back. As the LDS Church begins its general conference this weekend, many members of the faith have a certain political issue on their minds. The conference commences just 1 month before Election Day, when voters in California will be deciding whether to ban gay marriage, a ballot measure the church actively supports. Church issued a letter signed by Church President Thomas S. Monson encouraging members to devote time and money to pass Proposition 8.
The letter comes out from the First Presidency, which is, you know, like God speaking, and it says, get your checkbooks out.
I was in church when the letter was read, and I kind of looked around, and, you know, the energy began to accumulate, and this has to be done now. It was a surprise. Yeah, the fire was indeed stoked.
With a July opinion poll showing 8 could lose, Mormon leaders put out a call to Mormons in California. A message from their prophet beamed in from Salt Lake City. Mormons only released 4 minutes of the broadcast on their website, but now, audio from the entire one-hour broadcast has been uncovered.
You are a mighty army. You'll be responsible for holding true to the doctrines of the church. Indeed, we are compelled by doctrine to speak out.
And when the word comes down from the Mormon prophet, it's not just a simple request, it's a commandment.
Mormons believe that their prophet literally is in communication with God, that Jesus Christ appears to their leaders in the Salt Lake Temple. So a call from their prophet is a call from God. It makes no difference in the Mormon mind.
It takes a very brave spirit to say, I do not feel that that came from God.
We ask that you do all you can to support the proposed constitutional amendment by donating of your means and time to preserve the sacred institution of marriage.
Means and time is part of a vow ceremony that Mormons perform in the temple, where we promise to give of our means and our time to defend the church and to forward its mission. And we're told that we will lose our eternal salvation if we don't keep that promise. So when Mormons heard means and time and their prophet's call, it was like code. It was, they got the message.
The time between now and Election Day will be a sprint instead of a marathon. We are again participating with a coalition of churches, organizations, and individuals. This organized approach actually works.
It dramatized more than I have ever seen it dramatized before. The fear that I think it's based on.
The face of sin today often wears the mask of tolerance. Do not be deceived. Behind the facade is heartache, unhappiness, and pain.
Nothing is going to come of this effort but sorrow for everybody. It is going to be the most divisive thing you have seen between families, between friends.
Some portray legalization of so-called same-sex marriage as a civil right. This is not a matter of civil rights. It is a matter of morality. These are eternal principles upon which the core doctrine of the restored gospel of Jesus Christ is based and are part of our Heavenly Father's great eternal plan.
Gays interrupt the Mormon plan for heaven. And so taking away any sense of humanity or rights that they may deserve or demand is just collateral damage in pursuit of what Mormons believe is critical to their beliefs.
To understand the Mormon Church's war against gay marriage, it helps to understand the type of heaven Mormons hope to get to. Mormons teach that their Heavenly Father was once a human being. And when he died, he became a god, where he began marrying spirit wives and having spirit offspring. Mormons believe before we were born on earth, we were born spiritually to a heavenly father and one of his many wives. Mormons believe that our lives on earth are a test. If we become Mormon, and if men and women marry in a Mormon temple, Mormons believe we too can become gods on our own planets, filled with our own spirit wives and children. This is the Mormon plan for heaven. So when a gay child enters the picture, who can't have children biologically, and doesn't want to marry someone of the opposite sex, it not only upsets the Mormon definition of the family, but disturbs the entire Mormon concept of the afterlife. This belief system is why Mormons hold to one of their most controversial beliefs, polygamy. In fact, for a time, mainstream Mormons lived this version of alternative marriage. Mormon pioneer Frederick Granger Williams had three wives. And because of that, his family was chased across the United States and finally into Mexico by mobs of evangelical Christians disgusted by Granger's practice of alternative marriage. This photograph was taken as his family was chased from one of their homes. A child barefoot in the mud, an infant in his mother's arms. His family had no protections, just persecution. Generations later, this Mormon family would once again know the sting of having rights denied based on the intimate, personal choice of marriage. Tyler Barrack is the great-great-great-grandson of Frederick Williams. And Williams' great-great-great-grandson-in-law is now Spencer Jones.
My parents, they know, but they're Mormon, they're members of the Mormon faith, and their church told them very clearly they had to support Prop 8. And it was like talking to a wall. When we got married, things shut down. I got really hateful and hurtful emails from my family saying, "How could you do this? You know this is wrong. We raised you better than that. We can't support you, and in fact, we refuse to find any joy or happiness in what you have done." And I wrote them back, and I'm like, "How can you? How can you say that on our happiest of happiest days, that you refuse to find joy and happiness in my joy and happiness? Do you love me or do you not love me? I mean, is that not what you want? You say you want me to be happy. This is what makes me happy."
I have a very large extended Mormon family who has made it very clear that they do not support me, that they do not support Spencer and I. They gave money to the campaign, Yes on 8. I'm their nephew. They know me. They know who I am. They know that my love is real, and they still gave money to take away our right. We did not know how bad it was going to hurt.
So many of our family members feel like they have nothing to talk to us about anymore. If you're on this side of the fence and we're on this side of the fence, then we have nothing in common. I don't want to hurt my family, but I need them to know, and every other LDS person, that this is not about attacking the church. This is about making a stand for what is right.
Tyne Spence, Making History, June 17th, 2008.
All I want are equal rights for all of my children.
On an issue like this, it is impossible to be dispassionate, because you're not just talking about the law, you're talking about people.
I rarely got out into City Hall. But one of the few days I did, I got this young girl just ran up to me, literally grabbed me. And she looks up to me, she says, "Thank you for giving me two mommies." I lost it. I ran in the back office and just broke down. I was like, it's about families. It's about this daughter. It's about her family and her life and her two mommies. It was important for them to say to their daughter, "We love you and we're a family." And so what broke my heart is all these folks out there in Utah or elsewhere, that didn't see that, that don't know what they did, don't know what this is about. This wasn't just about damn gay couples. It was about their families and their mothers, seriously, and their sisters and brothers.
Before going further, I want to make clear that we are talking about protecting the divine institution of marriage. Marriage is a sacred institution ordained by God. To trifle with it is not in accordance with His plan. For this monumental undertaking in California, our best efforts are required.
The Mormon battle plan was well organized, but would take a large sum of money to accomplish, and getting that money out of the pockets of Mormons was crucial.
The church wanted to give the appearance of a grassroots effort, and so they had contributions made through their members, voluntary or not voluntary.
Our relatives were visited by their bishop and told, "We believe that your family could donate this much." And then they sat there and waited for him to write out the check.
Some bishops and stake presidents went to members' homes with their tithing records in hand and said, "This is how much you make. This is how much we think you can give. Give this much money. Give this much time. Or you face disfellowshipment. You might lose your callings. You might lose your membership."
And if you're familiar with the sort of the social and emotional setting in the Mormon culture, that's about as high pressure as you can get.
I think what surprised every one of us out here in California, I mean truly, actually shocked us, was the amount of money coming from the Mormon Church.
The money started creeping in July, and suddenly the first week in August, $200,000 a day, $300,000 a day, up to $511,000 a day in August. I mean, we're talking Obama kind of money. We looked at the donor list, and names we'd never heard of were giving $25,000, $50,000, huge contributions that had never given any money to a political campaign before, except Mitt Romney for president.
These little families that dug into their retirement funds, that used their kids' college funds.
There's a couple in Sacramento who gave $50,000 to Yes on Prop 8. They have five small children, all under the age of nine. They virtually closed out their college fund. They drive a 10-year-old Honda. They gave all their money because the prophet told them to give to this campaign. They gave till it hurt.
You know, Mormons grow up being taught and believing that obedience is the first principle of heaven, and that if you obey, you'll be blessed and everything will be okay. The church as an institution really took advantage of people's willingness to be obedient. And I think it just seems a little underhanded to me, you know. But it worked, you know.
Brothers and sisters, thank you again for all that you've done to help promote California's Proposition 8. Thank you for your donation of money. Thank you very much.
The church proclaimed that they were part of a coalition of organizations dedicating to countering gay marriage. The coalition takes the heat off the church. Unfortunately, if you look at the other members of the coalition, though, most of them did not have the funding capabilities, the organizational capabilities of the LDS Church. The church was very content to funnel their money. In essence, they were the man standing behind the curtain that you're not supposed to look at.
The church had set up a specific post office box for all the Mormon money to go to. The term is called bundling, where you bundle all the contributions together. So they could actually check off to make sure that everyone had given what he had committed to give, and that they could go then to the other religions and say, "Okay, Catholics, okay, evangelicals, here's $5 million, here's $10 million. They took over virtually every aspect of Prop 8.
With money and their front group in place, Mormons jumped into action.
Come on in.
You ready for this?
Yeah, you guys hungry? We're networking with other single adults throughout the state of California, getting the word out, getting them energized behind Proposition 8.
Many of you will text message, blog, make phone calls, use Twitter, You update your profiles and you write on your walls. It is my hope that you will go viral.
That's what we do, yeah. We stay up late. Write a blog. Put it out there. Make a YouTube video. I'm an internet guy. I can make websites, so I made a website.
I'm calling up old friends and asking them to get involved.
LDS members in our area have been asked to begin making phone calls.
The more we talk about it, the more information that gets out there. I think that's going to swing it towards the yes.
Members are manning phone banks, distributing campaign materials, and intensifying voter registration efforts.
Well, I feel it's important for my children's future. I don't want my children to grow up in a genderless society. This is my opportunity to fight for religious freedom.
That makes me feel American. I mean, call it cheesy, but it really does.
The Mormons took over the volunteer aspect of the campaign. Every Saturday, 25,000 going door to door, and they would go out, bam, 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 door after door after door after door.
Mormons are very good at knocking on doors and canvassing.
Hello.
But after one or two weekends, they revised their rules and said that a member should go out with a non-member, that they should absolutely not wear a white shirt or a necktie or a name badge.
They were coached on how not to look like Mormons, but how to just look like concerned citizens.
Mormons were also coached on how to bring up Proposition 8 to their friends and neighbors.
So why do you care about who marries who or whatever?
I don't know. This whole Proposition 8 thing seems like it could be a pretty big deal. And there's got to be more to this same-sex marriage stuff than what Hollywood and everyone says. I mean, seriously, think about it. Is there anyone in Hollywood that you would trust with anything important?
So what's the deal about the website?
You should check it out. I'll email it to you.
Okay. We have established a website with videos, podcasts, messages, links, and materials you can reference.
If Proposition 8 fails, there's a whole bunch of consequences.
These training videos, launched on preservingmarriage.org, bear the Mormon trademark and logo, alongside a fleet of commercials.
If Proposition 8 passes, won't it take existing rights away from gay couples?
No rights will be taken away from same-sex partners if Proposition 8 passes.
If Proposition 8 fails, children will be taught that same-sex marriages are the equal of traditional marriages.
I learned how a prince married a prince, and I can marry a princess.
Teaching children about gay marriage will happen here unless we pass Proposition 8. Have you thought about what same-sex marriage means?
To me?
Think about it. Voting yes restores traditional marriage. Yes on Proposition 8.
The pamphlets that they were using, the six consequences of what would happen to the children and the freedom of religion and all this stuff, which they knew were lies.
Opponents of Proposition this commercial shows Mormons used children, other people's children, to fight same-sex marriage.
We're here today asking the Prop 8 campaign to stop exploiting our children for their own political gain.
My daughter Lucy is in the center of these Prop 8 advertisements, and the moment I saw the ad, I was appalled, frustrated, and saddened.
Prop 8 campaign spokesman Chip White says it's unclear where video for the ad came from, but he says the ad is expected to be a big moneymaker.
We hope that the new ad, in addition to informing voters, would inform contributors of the need to donate in the remaining days left.
After all, what Mormons needed was money. It didn't matter if the ad was based in fact. Critics say not only were the ads designed to mislead and misinform, but they were also designed to recruit people of other faiths, claiming this was really a fight about protecting religious freedom.
In addition, the court's decision will inevitably lead to conflicts with religious liberty, freedom of association, and free speech rights.
Churches that rent out their facilities for marriages could be forced to allow same-sex marriage ceremonies on their properties,
forcing all of us to give up the very foundation of speech and religious freedoms.
Those who oppose same-sex marriage on religious grounds will be increasingly labeled as intolerant.
The freedom of families to raise children in an atmosphere that values and supports the unique importance of marriage between a man and a woman will be lost.
They also taught that they would have to close branches and congregations, that they wouldn't be able to practice their religion as they should in California if other people got the same rights they already hold. Which is patently untrue, but it's a lie that works.
And it was working. Slowly, the numbers began to turn. The money rolled in, and the ads kept the issue alive.
Religious adoption agencies may be forced to place children in same-sex marriages or discontinue providing adoption services altogether.
Total nonsense. Legally, there is nothing to it, and they must know this. They've got a good legal team helping them out at the LDS Church. It's a lie. Religions can set their own rules. The LDS Church could still ban African Americans from their temple.
We have cried for months over this, this issue of the church really being the one to sway with, I believe, lies and propaganda. And that's what the integrity of it was, so blatantly anti-gay.
LDS members Lynn and Steve Stay drove all the way from St. George to deliver a message up close and personal.
We decided we needed to come up in October and be part of the group that delivered the petitions to the church.
We would very much appreciate if the leadership of the church would read these letters.
I have to tell you, I was just absolutely shaking in my boots. I would say it was probably my coming out. And we looked at each other and said, well, here we go. You know, we're not asking you to change your stance, but to actively recruit from the pulpit using the tactics that they used to be supporting the ads, the lies, to be funding that was just more than I could wrap my brain around.
Despite the petitions from the Stays and hundreds of others, and with an October 31st USA survey showing Prop 8 still could lose, Mormons flushed more money into the fight. But this time, the greater surge came from Utah.
The last week of the campaign, over $3 million came in from Utah alone to influence this California election.
Mormons make up about 2% of the population of California, but accounted for over 71% of the campaign contributions.
With more money flowing in, the all-out media blitz continued.
There's a storm gathering.
The clouds are dark.
And I am afraid.
My freedom will be taken away.
I am a Massachusetts parent, helplessly watching public schools teach my son that gay marriage is okay.
I will have no choice.
The storm is coming.
Tyler and Spencer decided to stand up and take their fight for marriage equality to the streets.
Protection.
On June 17th to get married, just because we wanted to show everyone else that our love was the same as everyone. And having it taken away is something that is really, really starting to terrify us.
We just walked over here from our apartment, which is like 5 blocks away, and this is San Francisco, and this is our city, and it's been taken over by all these hateful chants and signs and people who aren't even from here, bust in from who knows where. I heard there's people from Utah.
What is the problem with my son being married? Why are you outraged?
A mixed generation. Because they will have all friends tell them it's right to have same-sex marriage. Our country will run out of people.
Why do all of you God-hating lesbians and homosexuals accuse everybody else of being haters?
I hope one of your grandkids is gay, then you'll understand.
My grandkids both graduated from a Christian college, and no, they are not lesbians. They know better.
It's not my nature to go out and get fucked in the ass by a queer.
So it's not his nature to take and love a woman?
Well, no, because he doesn't like women. You don't like women, right?
No, I'm gay.
This is why we have AIDS. AIDS started with the homosexual.
I don't have AIDS. I'm not HIV positive.
You're the one that's making it all about sex, dude. This is about love. This is my son.
That's all you keep saying.
You know,
this is my son. You're the pervert. You won't make this about love.
Quiet.
What's wrong with me and my love? Yeah, you laugh. But this is real. You're taking away my
life.
You laugh.
at the propositions, and the proposition that was the costliest ever in California history and the focus of the nation's attention, Proposition 8.
As it got to about the 30% reporting.
Well, look at the vote for Prop 8 around the state.
I couldn't believe it. I really thought we were going to win. I believed that what we did, the phone banking, the fighting, everything we did for this, we were going to win.
We'll continue our coverage as the rest of the votes come in.
Well, California's measure to ban same-sex marriage still too close to call, and that's with 96% of the precincts reporting.
The battle tonight has been won.
Supporters of Proposition 8, the ban on same-sex marriage, are claiming victory.
We're glad to have the victory.
A big victory for the LDS Church, a church that played one of the most prominent roles in the Say Yes on Prop 8 battle. Raised some $22 million to get the initiative passed.
We think it was the right thing to do.
They have gone ahead to stop performing same-sex marriages.
As much as I was extraordinarily pleased and exhilarated by what happened with Barack Obama, I was equally disturbed by California becoming the first state in the United States of America in its entire history to take rights away from people by changing its constitution.
On the bus ride home at 7:30 in the morning after getting off the night shift, and we just cried on the phone together.
And I was shocked. We were brokenhearted. I've never felt a pain like that.
Who did this? Who voted for this? Who could have done this? Why did this happen like this?
We know the voice of the Lord. We know when he wants us to do something. When something needs to be done, we know how to do it.
I'd never felt the slap of indignity like that. Society saying, you are not as good as the rest of us. We will not treat you the same as we are treated because you don't deserve it. I was so quickly reminded that we are not first-class citizens. We do not have all the same rights as everyone else walking around. Our straight counterparts have way more rights than we do.
It was one of the most expensive ballot measures in American history, passing by a 4-point margin. Couples like Tyler and Spencer, who for a matter of weeks enjoyed the protections of marriage, woke up on November 5th, defeated.
Not allowing somebody to have the same fundamental right that you have. As a black person, you have the right to marry whoever you want. Years ago, you did not have that right.
To evangelicals, Mormons took the credit for the victory. Mormon money, Mormon front groups, and the Mormon way of influencing people.
It's a great victory for California. They've reaffirmed for the second time now, and hopefully for the last time they'll have to do it, that traditional marriage is important and that marriage is between a man and a woman.
You know, it's one thing to believe what you're going to believe, to teach what you're going to teach, you know, worship and let worship. But when the Mormon church or any church steps outside of its bounds and takes away people's rights, that is absolutely inexcusable to me.
I have many issues with the Mormon. I don't believe that they know the God of the Bible. However, my hat's off to the Mormon church for putting in that money. And so I say, as a street preacher, attaboy to the Mormon church.
You lost. California spoke volumes against same-sex marriage.
That's right.
Give it up.
Tax the Mormon church. Tax the Mormon church. Tax the Mormon church.
Even before becoming involved in the Prop 8 campaign, Mormon leaders warned there would be a public outcry to take away the church's tax-exempt status.
The argument will be that the government shouldn't subsidize discriminatory beliefs with tax exemptions.
we're a country that's founded on separation of church and state, and if they're going to get a tax-exempt status, then they shouldn't be allowed to meddle in politics the way they did.
Well, what ought to put their 501c3 status at risk is their political involvement in the first place. And they're running these campaigns specifically aimed toward the passage of initiatives. I find it just amazing that people are getting tax deductions for putting money into a church that's running itself as if they're a political action committee.
As a church worth tens of billions of dollars, Mormon leaders banked on a little-known fact, that their status as a tax-exempt church meant they would not have to open their books to the public. Not even when Mormon money or activism influenced a political campaign.
There is no public disclosure for the Mormon Church on what they did unless the IRS comes in and audits them, and even that is a private matter. It's not made public.
When pressed about how much they contributed to Proposition 8, the Mormon Church's first report was a mere $2,078.97. Fred Karger suspected that was a lie.
I filed a complaint with the California Fair Political Practices Commission right after the election, contending that the Mormon Church spent a lot more in non-monetary contributions than they reported. And 8 days later, I got this letter from the executive director of the commission saying that they were launching an unprecedented investigation.
That investigation got Mormons their first rash of negative press. Soon, the church changed their tune.
The church had attacked me when I filed this complaint, but then 3 months later they filed a report, $190,000 they claimed they spent in non-monetary contributions. I think that was vastly underreported. They did 23 very slick commercials they put down for $29,000. One commercial could have cost that easily. They had $96,000 in staff time. They reported on Election Day, and that money really goes back till August. They later admitted to a reporter.
I mean, they've just fudged this. It's the way they're used to doing business, where they can kind of juggle the books, but you cannot do that when you're dealing with an election.
Or can they? The IRS prohibits tax-exempt institutions from participating in political campaigns, and they are not allowed to contribute substantial amounts of money to political lobbying, begging the question, what is a substantial amount?
You know, ironically, nobody knows exactly what substantial is. We should make nonprofits, religious and otherwise, accountable to tell the people, tell the public, how much they spend on individual campaigns for political ideas.
There are election laws there to protect the voters. The voters want to know who gives the money before the election, not 3 months afterwards.
But we got to know the bottom line. Who gave the money? For what purpose? How was it spent? It's only fair. It's only reasonable. Churches do not, in my judgment, have any special right to act in the dark.
Of course, that's just money in politics. But we're talking about people. People who've been the brunt of Mormon bigotry for nearly 100 years. Mormon words spoken from the pulpit that eventually turned into policy, like Proposition 8.
Bruce R. McConkie, a member of the Quorum of the Twelve Apostles, made a statement several years ago to the youth of the church that it would be better to be dead than to be homosexual. The state of Utah today has one of the highest suicide rates in the world. It's higher than any other state, higher than most countries. A disproportionately large number of these suicides are young gay Latter-day Saints who simply felt there was so much pressure on them that they felt that taking their own life was the best alternative.
I had a father who told me that he wouldn't have a daughter that was gay. And that hurt.
My mother sent me a letter. And I think it would kill her to listen to me talk about this letter, but she sent me a letter telling me how lost I was.
She said that I was confused and I didn't really
have those thoughts and feelings, that everyone goes through that, and that with some counseling and medication that I can change.
Just a couple of days after Prop 8 passed, she told me that she believes that I think I'm gay.
That if I continued on that path, that I would go to hell.
I had been taught that I would never be able to see my mom, who had passed away previously.
Because, you know, in my family's view, I've torn up the eternal family.
I had this crossroads before me, this decision to make.
And I knew that I was living a lie, and I just felt that it was time to go.
And it was just more than I could take. The thought of losing my family, it was just more than I could take.
I had a certain spot in a certain canyon. There's a little parking lot that just connects right to a cliff that would for sure kill me.
I ended up taking some pills.
I just took pills. I didn't care anymore.
I woke up with a razor blade in one hand and a bottle of wine, empty bottle of wine in the other hand, in a pile of my own vomit, and went, I'm in trouble.
I would go and I would cry in that spot for hours, thinking if I'm really worth living, if it's worth for me to go on.
We lost a really good friend during Proposition 8, a young man, about 23, who took his life. And I'm crying. We know a few who have done that.
My feeling for them is, have mercy. These kids in those situations, many of them haven't told their parents. Most of them haven't told their parents. They live in terror of losing everything. Their parents, their homes, their friends, their future.
I've attended some of their funerals where maybe nothing is mentioned about their orientation at all. Just the cheapest coffin that can be purchased.
For someone to have to go through that, for someone who has to deal with a family that's so hateful, it makes me sad. I can't stand it.
I've attended funerals where bishops and stake presidents have made comments like, so-and-so was a wonderful young man. I don't know when he went astray. And more or less kind of condemned them right there at the funeral, and it's silent and no one, you know, sometimes I've felt like I want to get up and say, this was a good kid.
This is the coroner's report for Henry Stewart Mattis. Case number 00-00629, Santa Clara County. The decedent has been found at the Mormon church. Blood splattered on both hands. A gunshot entry wound is visible on the palate of the mouth. Brain matter is on the concrete. A computer-generated note stating, "Do not resuscitate," is secured by two safety pins on the front of the decedent's dark gray shirt.
Stewart Mattis, probably the first openly publicized gay suicide of a young gay man who was obsessed, even as a little child. He said that he would blow out his birthday candles and wish to not be gay, and that if he still hadn't overcome it even as a little child, he wouldn't let himself watch his favorite TV program. He wouldn't let himself go to birthday parties because he still had that. And he was so distraught.
Not long after their son's suicide, Stewart's parents wrote this book in quiet desperation with a pro-Mormon stance. Stewart's parents agreed to appear in this documentary,
but then backed out.
Yeah, Reed, this is Fred Mattis speaking. And you mentioned that this documentary that you're doing is regarding Prop 8. We're not in a position to make any comment about Prop 8. We don't have any other position but what the church's position is.
Stuart didn't have to die. And to take that child's life and erase it in the name of obedience, and to continue to be silent and silence yourself for the brethren, is a crime.
Stuart Mattis, like all other gay Mormons, was taught by his church leaders he was not gay, just tempted, and that he could be fixed. Stuart Mattis died trying.
People who consider themselves to be homosexual or consider themselves to be gay, that's their terminology. That's not who they are. You know, the sex that you practice is not who you are. Nobody's born that way. If God puts in the scriptures that it's a sin to live that lifestyle, then he's not going to have them born that way after he said it's a sin. Do they have tendencies or weaknesses? Of course. Don't we all? Some people can take one drink and become an alcoholic, and others can drink and never be an alcoholic. We all have our weaknesses. It's a weakness that if they don't want to live that style, so when they're young, you have to work with them. You have to love them and teach them and let them know that they can come out of the lifestyle.
I am exactly who God created me to be. Woo-hoo! If the things that we are saying are touching your spirit,
I don't have a clue what they're talking about. I can't hear it over the generator.
Since you haven't really heard what they're said, how can you be sure they haven't said anything that you agree with? So the fact that like BYU students, gay and lesbian students, are suffering, in fact, committing suicide, should anything be changed policy-wise to kind of like reach out to those people?
There's plenty of support options available. In fact, I've got a list if you like. I've got a full list of about 10 different options that are available to people who are struggling with homosexual feelings. There are options for treatment, you know. There are things they can do.
Well, they're born that way.
That's what they say. Pretty much truth just isn't based on popular opinion, you know. I mean, there are translations of the Bible that say all kinds of things, you know.
What is truth based on?
Truth is based on what God says.
And what God says to Mormons regarding fixing homosexuals led to a suicide epidemic on the campus of Mormon-owned Brigham Young University.
I was getting ready for work one day, and I got a telephone call, and it was someone that identified themselves as a detective with BYU security, and that they were working on a case that they felt that I could help them with. I said, well, I'm on my way to work, but they said, this will just take a moment if you want to stop by. So, of course, obedient person that I am, I did. They started reading off a list of names. They said, well, your name is on this list. These are all people that have been turned in as homosexuals. So I was given an appointment to come back. And that time they made me take my clothes off. They were starting to show pornography on the wall. In the emergency room, if somebody overdosed, we'd give them syrup of Ipecac to make them vomit. 30 cc's is an adult dose. They gave me 60 cc's. And so about the time I was throwing up, well, you're just a fucking cocksucker. I was horrified. The last appointment that I went to was the worst. They put electrodes on me, on my wrists, and on a strap on my chest, and on my genitals. I was given a button that I was told to push if I saw something that I felt was sinful and wrong, or if I liked it. At this point, it was only naked men. I was told if I didn't push the button strongly enough that they would push it for me. And I don't recall how long that went on, but I was told to get dressed and leave. I have a friend who has since passed away, who they kept pushing the button on him because he wouldn't do it. He became totally sexually dysfunctional. It basically fried him.
Bruce Barton says, of the list of 12, two of the men disappeared from BYU's campus, and several others committed suicide.
I overdosed pills within a week of being turned in.
But Bruce survived, becoming a nurse at a mental hospital near BYU, where he says he met young, gay, Mormon men condemned.
I chose a few of them to do my case studies on. And I found that the only thing that they had in common is that they were all charged with homosexual crimes. Crime against nature. There were some of them that the doctors convinced the families, and the families convinced the young men to have frontal lobotomies. The frontal portion of your brain is where your emotions, your attractions are considered to be. The most common is to go with a long needle through the eye socket. Sometimes they will go through the temporal area. As I understand it, it would just be damaging part of the brain. I've always been surprised that others have not told their story. But I know why they don't. Recounting sometimes is as painful or more so than going through it. So.
Despite numerous first-hand accounts, Mormon leaders flatly deny these things ever happened. And some say Mormons have softened since the days of shock therapy, but not these
kids.
Where
my dress? This would have been really freaking cold.
What we know about our homeless youth is there are thousands of them in Utah.
As you can see, there's trash every freaking where. Not a clean place.
Many came out to their parents, and their parents didn't want them anymore.
Yeah, I can't see a damn thing, though. Where's your flashlight?
I didn't bring it.
Whoa, shit, what was that?
Oh. All over the country, children are kicked out of their homes for being queer or for coming out or for gender expressing in a non-traditional way. And what that means is we have a whole bunch of youth who are under 18 who have nowhere to go.
There's rats everywhere.
They are kicked out of their homes because they are a disturbance, or they don't want them there. It's part of some sort of disgust that the Mormon Church doesn't allow around.
This is pretty much all we have: mattress, a couple blankets that are really, really filthy. That was my bed, of course.
We'll show you a little bit of the inside if you want.
What those children go through to survive on the streets is appalling. Drug abuse, prostitution, even here in Utah. You know, young children who have to take drugs to stay awake so they don't get raped and beaten.
I said a while ago, people just don't care about each other these days. I mean, it's fight for yourself. And if you're odd or strange or different, you're against the norm. You're not accepted.
Yeah. Be here in spring. You'll wake up, you find 10, 15 cockroaches on you. Almost every day. Not the best way to live.
In the midst of all this, how does a young person have hope?
There is no hope.
LDS Church offices, can I help you?
We ask Mormon leaders to answer for these things, to the teachings, the tragedies, the lobbying.
We're not going to be doing on-camera interviews right now because we don't want to put ourselves front and center in a battle with the gay community. We don't want to do that.
I think you guys already are, though, front and center in a battle.
Well, we're hoping we're not very much longer, to be honest with you.
To be quite honest, I think that's what $22 million does.
And unfortunately, I don't see that anyone's going to go on the record with all of this with you on camera.
So when telling the Mormon story, you have to tell it through their members and their actions. Actions like on July 9th, 2009, this moment caught on Mormon night vision surveillance cameras on Salt Lake's Main Street Plaza, a place patrolled by undercover Mormon security guards. Here, Mormon guards tear a gay couple out of each other's arms, throwing them to the pavement and calling police to arrest them. Why? One of the men kissed his partner on the cheek while walking in front of the Mormon temple. Mormon actions are also on display by this anti-gay Mormon group, America Forever.
A group called America Forever demonstrated in the Utah Capitol Rotunda today. They wore gags and held signs calling homosexuals intolerant.
Get an education! You don't know, go read Jesus!
Love is great!
Look what their Bible, look what their Jesus has taught them, look what their country has taught them.
Jesus says, don't judge people! What the hell are you doing?
Responding to their prophet's call, they are well-funded. With enough money to run this full-page anti-gay ad in the arts section of Salt Lake City's biggest newspaper. The weekend the ad ran, a gay teenager saw it and attempted suicide. And this man.
Your initiative feeds on the unreasonable notion that you have these magically organic rights to do whatever you desire.
Paul Merrow, the president of the Sutherland Group, who after Proposition 8 passed in California, told an audience of gay people.
You constantly confuse what you do for who you are. Your equality is illusory. Your ideas about marriage and family are an illusion. You think a piece of paper magically bestows upon you a real marriage. You think calling yourselves a family makes you a family. You think the state calling you a family makes you a family. And in a very immature emotional frame of reference, you think love alone makes a family. Two mommies, two daddies, who cares?
Mormon women are also power players in the fight.
From what I understand, gay people are not a protected class.
No, they're not, and they shouldn't be. Because
this is Mormon Gail Ruzicka, one of the most influential lobbyists against gay marriage in the United States.
Protected classes are people that, color of their skin, mm-hmm. or religion, because we have a constitution that is always protected and a Declaration of Independence that protects religion. Mm-hmm. So those are the things that are protected. But we don't protect a class of people based on a choice that they make on what they participate in.
At one point, the U.S. government said to the Mormon Church the same thing you're saying to the gay community.
But remember, even then, you still had a man and a woman marrying, coming together, forming a family, and bringing children into that family unit. Am I supportive of polygamy? No.
But you are in the next life.
That's right. If you believe in the next life, then you believe in God. And if you believe in God, then you know homosexual relations are immoral. In fact, would keep you out of that very kingdom that where polygamy will be practiced.
All of these Mormon activists tell the story Mormon leaders won't agree to discuss in an interview, but nobody conveys Mormon disgust for gay people better than this man.
Do you believe that homosexual sex, two men having anal sex, is moral?
Chris Butters. Three times the Mormon Church has selected him to head up congregations as a bishop, and he's been elected a senator by his mostly Mormon supporters multiple times. Butters was first vilified for making this comment from the Utah State Senate floor.
This baby is black, I'll tell you. This is a dark, ugly thing.
Butters' half-hearted apology later fell on deaf ears.
There's a lot of reasons why the gays really, they named me public enemy number one in their convention. And the reason is, one is that I was the one that pushed the marriage amendment. And the second reason is that I took all their gay clubs out of the schools.
Everyone's out to get you, and you don't have anywhere to go to talk, to say, this is what's going on in my life. My parents hate me, my friends hate me, the entire world is against me, even the Utah legislation is trying to pass bills against me.
In the Constitution being something that was inspired of God, and the way these people are destroying the Constitution is they're saying the Constitution is a living document. That means it's subject to change. But truth don't change. It does not change, and I won't accept any of that. So they say, well, you know, marriage is between a man and a woman, that's changed. Look around, look at all these combinations of abominations as far as I'm concerned, and I believe that they're probably the greatest threat to America going down I know of.
The gays.
Yeah.
Forget nuclear proliferation, global warming, starvation, and the economic crisis, no. Mormon Bishop Butters believes gay people will bring about the end.
They want to talk about being nice. They're the meanest buggers I've ever seen. It's just like the Muslims. It's been taken over by the radical side. And the gays are totally taken over by the radical side. They say we want to be treated just equal. They don't. To me, homosexuality will always be a sexual perversion. And you say that around here now and everybody goes nuts. But I don't care.
this interview with Mormon Senator Butters because it was done during Senate business and on Senate time and inside the Utah State Senate offices, was attained by the media, and the firestorm was epic.
Fox 13 News at 9.
State Senator Chris Butters is in the hot seat again, and that's first on Fox.
The story spread, and the hot seat got hotter and hotter.
In a new Prop 8 documentary, Senator Chris Butters is now comparing some in the gay community to radical Muslims.
And it comes just a year after Butters offended many African Americans. ABC4's Chris Van Oker has the new comments in the story.
For a time, it looked like Mormons rejected the hate speech Butters seemed to embody.
The radical gay movement.
It's an embarrassment to the whole state.
Can we get a quick word with you?
No.
Even the Mormon Church threw Butters under the bus.
Also today, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints issued a statement adding Senator Butters does not speak for the church.
Only a few of Butters' colleagues spoke out against what he had said, and with their silence, Butters became somewhat of an icon to Utah Mormons.
One person writes, "Go Senator Butters. He is now officially my hero."
So many times he's mischaracterized down here, and people love to hate somebody, and Chris is one that they seem to like to beat up on.
Obviously, they're making way too much of somebody up here speaking their mind and saying how they believe.
After days of saying nothing, Mormon Senate President Michael Waddups stunned reporters at a news conference.
I want the citizens of Utah to know that the Utah Senate stands behind Senator Butters' right to speak, that we stand behind him as one of our colleagues and his right to serve in this state. We think he's a stalwart. We think he's a senator that represents the point of view of many of his constituents and of many of ours. We agree with many of the things that he said. We stand foursquare behind his right to say what he feels he wants to say and needs to say.
Can you take a moment to address the gay community, please?
Thank you. And if there are individual questions...
Senator Waddups, would you please address the gay community that feels hurt and maligned by Senator Butters' actions and words?
If there are additional questions, you can feel free to come down.
Senator Waddups did not answer my question. I wanted Senator Waddups to speak to the gay community that was hurt.
Do we have equal rights, the same equal rights that you have?
And he didn't have the courage, he didn't have the guts to actually look me in the eye. His eyes went down, he wouldn't look at me, and he wouldn't talk to us. I want our elected leaders to know that we are their constituents. And I hope it will help us to come out, to be more visible, to be to raise our voices louder.
Senator, there's someone
else that would like an apology.
Well, they ain't going to get one.
My beloved brothers and sisters, as we walk uprightly and keep the commandments, there will be nothing in this world that can defeat us.
Shame on you! Shame on you! Shame on you! Shame on you! Shame on you!
Justice! Justice!
It was just too much.
No more hate!
Far too much. For far too long. The fight to strip rights from anyone whose life is contrary to their heavenly plan. Too much to stomach for tens of thousands, gay and straight, all over the country.
You know, we're not asking to go to a Mormon church, but I'm not going to have them bar the doors to City Hall.
Look at what people would justify in the name of religion because it's their religion.
And yeah, they're like, we need to protect families, but what about our family?
When history is clear enough that we really see the damage that we have done, we should weep. And we will. We will weep.
When you suffer the kind of subjugation that we have, and still do, the collapse of dignity robs us of our humanity. And the question is, how do we get it back? We have to, in effect, go to those who have damaged us and say, heal me. You owe me my dignity and my self-respect. And you need to, in effect, embrace my soul and tell me that I'm a whole human being, because I am.
And the fight returned to where the campaign started, Salt Lake City, Utah. There, in the shadow of the Mormon temple, 5,000 people declared enough.
We are seeing a repeat of a tragic and deplorable history. We will celebrate full marriage equality someday.
I would like to convince the church right now in what they've done. Because right now, we are here. And right now, we have this momentum. Don't lose it.
This movement has started inside of me, and I can't stop it.
This is just an issue about two people who have chosen to spend the rest of their lives together. I just want people to get that this is simple. This is just love.